This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Talca Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
We are back. Our first game of the 2024 season takes us back to the RSC this coming Friday. Takes us back to the scene of some Molloy magic, takes us back to the scene of a Davy McPenno that left us on the brink of promotion in 08. We all know how that story ends. Back to the scene of a trophy lift in the year 2000, thanks to a Richie Baker goal. We'll preview this week's game in the RSC, as well as hearing from Mark Coyle. The dynamic duo of Christy Gray and Maggie Pearce, and Aaron Rowe from our academy is going to review the under-13's trip to the Carnival Cup in Spain. Throw in some listener questions, ticket and tragedies, the Richie Rankins, and some hot takes. And we have a very, very busy show coming up. To help me to somehow break down a very, very busy podcast, Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
Duty, thanks for having me back again. The three-peat, as they say. Delighted to be back. Hopefully, that means I'm not doing too much wrong. So I'm looking good so far. Delighted to get through this with you.
Well, speaking of trees, we've gone for the three-man boot this week. The man who kept the 1895 podcast ship sailing after the captain jumped overboard. Adam Leonard, thank you for giving up your evening.
Steve, thanks, Will, for having me. It's nice that we have a nice little triple going on the week of Valentine's, isn't it? Good to be back. very much looking forward to Friday, and thanks as ever for having me on, Steve.
No problem. Look, mentioned in that lengthy intro what it's all about this week, back to the real business. Waterford in the RSC. I mentioned that magic moment from Gav Molloy in the Cup semi-final. Men, are we looking forward to Friday?
Yeah, I can't wait. I think, look, in recent memory, it's only positive in terms of Waterford. I'm just really excited to be back. Myself, yourself, Duty, Reggie, Darren, Smith, we all made it out to the friendly and against Longford on Friday. And it's good to get over that kind of pre-season hump, good to be through all the games. The squad looked really sharp, so I'm just buzzing to get into Friday. Good away day. We do love our away days. Packed into the car, music on, spirits high. So, yeah, really looking forward to everything.
Ads, looking forward to hopefully some more Reds magic in the RSC.
Yeah, I was only looking at the goal back there from the semi-final a couple of years ago, and just the scenes when that goal went in, it's up there with Drogheda away in 2019 for me, which I remember fondly. But yeah, look, I'm buzzing to get going again. I think we've been around the block for a long time, Steve, haven't we? We've seen this team, and not this specific team, but we've seen Shells and the Doldrums and stuff, and you kind of go into season, yeah, it's almost like a chore. It's almost like, oh, jeez, you have to do this. But this season's different. It's definitely, look, I'm buzzing to get going. And this team, the squad's looking great. Look, Ben said it, and everything that goes into it, it's like a social occasion as well, isn't it? Which are mates again. So it's every Friday night from now until November is definitely sewn up.
That it is. The game itself, I mean, when the fixtures came out, all along I kept saying, avoid the promoted teams away and I'd be happy. And sure enough, bang, out of random fixture generator comes Waterford away. Adam, in terms of our first game of the season, would you say it's one of the more difficult ones we could have had?
Yeah, I do. I think, look, we're probably going to be talking about overachievers and underachievers next season. I think Waterford are going to have a very good season, and look at the nature of the game is you have to play them at some point, don't you? I know in this season we've been playing them twice away from home. So, look, you have to get out of the way. I think the fact that we've such fond memories down there kind of gives us impetus and makes us look forward to it. And I think, you know, without sounding arrogant, with the squad being how it is, you can't see a positive result. Now, look, at Waterford are going to come into the league and, like, they're going to be buzzing. They're going to be buzzing to get going, and they're going to try and, you know, make a name for themselves. And look, we had such a good season last season, and we're going to be a big scalp this season for all the promoted sides. So, definitely a tough game to get going with. But look, it's one of which that I think I can say for everyone, we're all buzzing for it.
Ben, we were in very close proximity for that cup semi final. We've acted the party poopers in Waterford in very recent times with that Cup semi-final win. They thought they had it sewn up. The ground was packed out really early on. They had their documentary cameras out to capture this big momentous game, and we pissed in their cornflakes basically that day. Are you expecting a repeat this week?
Yeah, I think, look, as I'd said, they're coming out and you don't really know what to expect from them. We're definitely a scalp there, and I think there is a bit of grit in the fixture, just because, like, when we arrived for that semi-final, we are beaten, even though we're the side in the higher division. We just had a run of games and we were there for the taking, and it didn't go their way, fortunately for us. So I think there definitely is a bit of bad blood there, and I think we'll probably see that straight away. I think there'll be a few tackles in there, just a bit of grit in the game. I just think the atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric. Like the last time we were there, just the nerves going in, that's not there this time. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. Usually, you know, with Sheds, you do have the little bit of pessimism and you're like, oh, now here we go. But I think it's all positive. Like the squad, everything is just kind of taking shape over the last few years, and you're going into this season. And look, I think the result is definitely there for us, and I would hope we could get it. It's not a good place to go to promote a team first game of the season, but look, you have to start somewhere. You have to play them once at any point. So look, you may as well get out of the way. We'll play them. We'll get it out of the way. Hopefully get the result and then a positive start to the season. That's all I'm hoping for.
Yeah, Ben, somebody put in our group chat, I don't remember who it was, saying that they're not happy with all this optimism going into the season. You know, everything's very positive and everyone seems to be happy with signings and happy with the players we have and the kind of mood going into the first game. Adam, you're one of those faces that were, you were in Merview, you were in Salt Hill, you were in Cabinteely, you were in all those places for some grim, grim times. Is it a strange feeling going into a Shell's top flight season so optimistic?
I can't remember being as optimistic and excited about a season for Shells in the longest time. I think the last time was 2020, but that kind of drizzled out quite quick, didn't it, with COVID and that. But like, if you look through the squad, Steve, I don't know about you, but I can't remember a squad this strong. And I don't want to hinge on arrogance, because that's always a bad territory to get into, but it is a very strong team. And like, if you look throughout the squad, it is one of the stronger squads. And I think this kind of optimism is granted, it's warranted. You know, we're playing in Europe this season, and, you know, I think the sky's the limit for this team. So, yeah, it is weird. It is weird coming in as optimistic. But with Duffer at the helm and with the squad we have, I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't.
No, I'd echo that. Me and you, Ben, we were lucky enough to go to the Longford game there. On Friday, the preseason friendly, a 7-0 spanking. And somebody tweeted after, actually saying, isn't it terrible to think that these kind of clubs tried to force a rivalry with us not too long ago, and now we're brushing them aside? I know, look, only preseason friendly. Yeah, I completely get that. But, Ben, we were very, very impressive in that game.
Yeah, really, really strong, like really positive. Like, as you said, there'd be times where you'd look at a Longford on a fixture list and be like, oh no, this is a difficult game, we're going to struggle here. And look, as you said, it's pre-season, it's very easy to get carried away with stuff like that. But just the composure, I think, is the word I'd look for to describe how the team played. They just move the ball so well. Longford are out there chasing shadows. Some really, really positive performances. Matty Smith looks absolutely electric. Like we said before on the pod, him coming back from injury is like a new signing, and I absolutely believe that he looks like a new signing. He was incredible. Obviously, the hat-trick. Sean Gannon as well was really impressive. I spent the first half on his side, basically, and just the level of communication and detail in the play. The man doesn't stop talking. So I don't know how he's not out of breath from talking or running, but he's just a constant source of information for every player. He's constantly shouting, you know, shoulder, someone there, make the run. Like, he's just a well of knowledge. He's really, really impressed with him. I think he'll be big this season. But overall, like, look, a 7-0 performance, you can't really fault it, can you?
No. The only thing I'd fault from that performance would be Sean Gannon's boots. Don't know about them. They're a bit loud now for my...
You're not liking the new Preds, no?
No, he was in some mad luminous orange gear, was he not?
They're the new Preds. They're just a different colour.
No.
I'm telling you now, I watched
them. You may be right, but no, they're not for me. They would bleeding blind you.
A black boots kind of man?
You have to get with the times at some stage, Ben. It's 2024. You know, just colour on the boots now, but those things,
at least he could be seen, that's all I'll say.
Adam, you missed one of the funniest OGs that I've seen. Right, at a game live, it must have been, for whoever it was scored the OG, it must have been just horrible for them, because obviously it was a behind closed doors game, so there's not really anybody there. And when it went in, it was just laughter. All you could hear, that was just laughter from the bench, from the crowd there, a couple of the players, they had a little chuckle. Basically, a fella tried to clear a ball off the line and he wellied it and bounced it off a long for player's face and ended up going back into the net, but it was fairly horrendous. Adam, with it being your pod debut for the season, in general, what have you made of the squad, those new signings that we've managed to bring in?
Yeah, I'm buzzing with squads, Steve. I was looking at it earlier, and as I said, look, I don't think we've had as many up front than anyways in the longest time. And I remember when the first few signs came in, so the likes of Gannon, Keith Ward, John Martin, they were the ones that were apprehensive about and saying, you know, need. And John O'Sullivan was another one who I think people were writing off for, balls even kicked. But like these are players who you need to push on to get to that next step. And then obviously look at Liam Board coming in. I think they're the two marquee signings that if Shells do go and achieve something this season, whether that be domestically or in Europe, they're going to be looking at those two as probably being a game changer. I'm really, really happy to have Will back. Liam Board coming in as well from... I don't know how that's going to work out, but it's going to be very interesting, I think, up front. Bort, Smith, Jarvis, Boydie, you know, John Martin, Dean Williams, Keith Ward off the bench, like Shane Farrell. There's so many options, and it's abundance. And I'd say Duffer has an awful headache, but as look at as a fan, as us, like, it's only good, isn't it? And I think defensively, maybe do a reinforcement. That's probably being greedy at this stage. But I'm very impressed with the signs, and the squad is looking as good as it ever has.
I should mention on Friday, actually, Wardy came off the bench to notch a header, which I don't think we'll see many headers by Keith Ward this season. But the best part of that, John Martin was standing just a couple of yards up from us, and a couple of the subs were making their way off, like down to the dressing room, but the lads had just been taken off. And John Martin went out of his way to shout after those players, saying, Wardy's out there scoring a header. So I'm sure he let them know all about that. In training, in terms of the starting 11 in that game, just for anyone obviously that follows through FAI Connect, the bodies are down in those lineups as trialists. A lot of them, they're not trialists, it's just the details have to be re-uploaded to FAI Connect, I think, so that's why they're down as a trialist. But like the starting 11 was Conor Kearns, Sean Gannon was like a right wing back, Tyreek was like a left wing back, Griff, Gav Malloy, Paddy Barrett were three centre-halves. Mark Coyle and JJ were in the middle as always. John O'Sullivan and Liam Burt were the two. I don't know. Everyone seems to be looking at it differently. I took them as two number 10s, kind of. And then Matty Smith was the number 9 or false 9. Ben, am I accurate enough with that shape, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the right shout there. They did look like number 10s. They did drift wide a little bit, but they did primarily play through the middle. I think another thing that I actually forgot to highlight, and I'd love to come back to, is Tyreek Wilson in that game.
Ben, funny you say that. I have a little asterisk beside Tyreek Wilson for that reason. Go on, sorry.
My God, it's like a whole new player. He's completely rejuvenated. He just didn't stop running. The head was down. Getting into tackles, he'd look up, he'd make a wonderful across-field pass. Like, he was just everywhere. He carried the ball so well. an really good link between defence and attack. Like, really, really good.
Yeah, he started to join in as like an extra midfielder then. Like, it's gas, like all this stuff about the negative Duffer, this type of shy talk, basically, you might as well call it what it is. It was a very, very fluid way of playing. Like, there was times where, like, Tyreek was nearly like an extra number 10, and then Griff was like a wing back. And there was just so much kind of chopping and changing in it. Like, JJ had kind of dropped out into a wing back position at one stage for a couple of minutes. And say it's going to be a nightmare to kind of deal with. One, and with Tyreek, like, in that role, there's loads of it now in, you know, high level football, Champions League, and all the rest of it, where, like, wing backs are inverted, you know, and they're going in and they're nearly playing like number 10s. That's kind of the way Tyreek was. And it's funny because I remember the manager mentioning that Tyreek was so intelligent. As a foot, like, his football intelligence was so, so high. So I wonder if that's just something they're kind of honing in on this year, that he's able for those kind of multiple roles. Another player who impressed me with his energy levels on Friday was John O'Sullivan. Now, Adam, I want an opinion on this. When you seen that the Reds had signed John O'Sullivan, what was your kind of first reaction to it?
I was surprised, but it's one of those things, wasn't it? It was doing the now, like, Bowles fans, unfortunately, and they were all, you know, last season stuff. But I'm firmly of the opinion of giving anyone a chance. Like, I think with he's made, I think one of the best things he's done at Shells is he's made players who probably have gotten a bit of stick off rival fans while they're at the club, but he's brought them in and they've done better. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think Paddy Barrett, Shane Griffin, they've done unbelievably well since coming in. And I think when they were leaving, at that time, they weren't kind of... Like, you have to give them a chance. I think you always have to be open to that. Probably wasn't as excited as what I would have been with other signings, but definitely, look, I'm willing to give him a chance. And I think if he's committed to the cause, which we know he is, then I think we could have a real, you know, asset on our hands.
I think Tyreek was kind of in that mould when he signed for us from Bowles as well, where they seemed to be happy to see the back of him. But my thing with it is, if Duffer and the staff trust him, you know, to play the way we play, you know, who are any of us to kind of question it? You know, the only thing I would say to people is, don't jump the gun on that one. Like, it's very easy to, you know, you see the name announced and everyone straight away goes, oh, that lot up the road are saying he's lazy and he's this and that and he downs tools and, you know, this type of crack. And I maybe not quite to the same extreme, but I would think Conor Cairns, when he signed, everyone went, oh, what are we after doing? You know, we've got rid of Clarke, I'm writing Conor Cairns. And I mean, look how that one ended up. So I mentioned it a couple of times. I mentioned it to Darren last Friday, and I think I said it to Reggie as well. I think John O'Sullivan's going to be a massive, massive player for us this year. Don't know what it is. I just think, I always say it about a player with a point to prove is a very, very dangerous player. So here's hoping that's the way it kind of pans out. Spinning back, reverting to Friday's game, this Friday's game against Waterford, They're a funny one. Like, it's always difficult with a newly promoted team. You don't really know what you're going to get. But, like, a quick flick through the transfers. Robbie McCourt, Darryl Leahy, Paul Regamond. Like, good signings. Like, you know, seasoned players. They know the ins and outs. Obviously, Bemi Arubi has gone down to Waterford as well. From Shells. They signed that lad, Casper. Centre-back with Bowles. Didn't really impress me too much. But in the grand scheme of things, Ben, will Waterford stay up?
I don't think so. To be honest, like, I think if you look around the league and the strength of other sides, it'd be very difficult for them to stay up. Like, I had them in my league prediction on the pod to finish 10th. I think in terms of the promoted sides, Galway are a much better side, and they also, like, going to AM&DC is going to be a nightmare. Like, it's just going to be a tough place to play, and I think that's the edge they have. And look, they've recruited well. I could be proven wrong. I'll stand corrected if I am, but I just think with the strength of other teams around them, I can't see them staying up.
Yeah, it's one of that. Like, the bottom half of that league table is just... It's mad to think. We're kind of listening to a few League of Ireland podcasts at the minute. Everyone seems to have Rovers winning it, and then kind of Derry, Pats and Shells being like the next three. It's just, it's mad to think that that's kind of where we've pushed ourselves up to. But looking ahead to Friday, and with it being such a big occasion, a big game, we may head to the group chat, lads. What do we reckon?
Yeah, fire away.
Yeah, no better time. So up first, we'll hear from Mark Coyle. You will know it's Mark Coyle with his distinct accent. And then Christy Gray and Maggie Pierce were generous enough with their time. They sent us a small voice note as well, just to let us know how they get on. So here we go, Mark Coyle and Christy Gray and Maggie Pierce.
Hiya, lads. Just checking in here before the first game this week. Pre-season's gone well so far. We've worked very hard as a group. A lot of tough training sessions. And we've played two games most weekends, so a lot of 90 minutes under the belt for a lot of us. The injured lads are looking good. A lot of them are coming back now, looking fit, but there's a few more to come back. The new lads have come in, gelled well with the squad, added a lot of quality and experience to the group, which is good. And we're all very excited now to get the season started this Friday with a tough game away to Waterford, a challenge we're excited for. And the season we're looking forward to, as much as the fans are as well. And hopefully this year can be just as good as last year, if not better, for all of us as a collective. So yeah, just looking forward to the game now on Friday, and we're all excited for the season to start. And I hope that the fans are as well. So here's to a good year for us in 2024.
Hey, it's Christy and Maggie. Just talking about preseason. I think it's exciting to be back. Obviously, new managers in place and a few girls who have rejoined and are joining for the first time. The energy has been really positive so far. Just have one preseason match against Wexford. It was good to test out some things, but I think overall, just really excited to be back.
Yeah, we're both super excited to be back in with the girls, and we're hoping to have a little bit of a revenge season this year and win some hardware for the club.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the three competitions and the new girls joining the squad, with the energy and experience of the new managers, we're really looking forward to everything. So overall, just good to be back, and we're feeling settled in and excited for a good competitive year.
Gents, the thoughts of Mark Coyle, Maggie Pierce and Christy Gray there. I'll throw to the girls first. Maggie Pierce, with fighting talk, I would say, Adam, she referred to it as a revenge season.
Yeah, I suppose it is as well, Steve. Like, I think last season didn't go to plan at all. You know, we've recruited very well on the women's side of things as well, bringing in internationals and stuff. Mia Dodd coming back as well, I think, is a big one. So Owen Warren's going to want to put a stamp down on the league, isn't he? He's going to want to lay a marker down, and I think the girls are very determined to get back to where they once were. And I've said it umpteen occasions, when this side is on form, it's one of the best sides in the country. So yeah, no, fighting words, but I don't think there's no better player to say it.
Ben, is there a risk maybe of putting too much pressure on themselves as a group, as a squad, as a staff, by, you know, wanting to fight so hard to better runner-up in the two competitions?
No, I think that just shows the level of the squad, maybe the ambition of the club as a whole. Like, if you look at what Damien has done on the men's side, the manager, he's instilled that fight into the players, and I think, like, the girls, they've a lot to prove, and they have said themselves, like, they're putting it out there. No one's putting that pressure on them. They're putting it on themselves. So I think it's just the old cliche of pressure makes diamonds. I think they want to go out there and they want to do one better. They felt like they let themselves down, and I think they'll do really well this season. Owen Weirin's recruited really well. He's brought in some great players, and I think Christy and Maggie bringing them back just speaks volumes of the ambition of the squad, I suppose.
I'd echo that. I love it. I love players coming out saying stuff like that. I mean, why not? You know, like, so close last year on both fronts, and like, to be so bitterly disappointed, as everyone was, being runners up in the league and losing the cup final. Like, there's a lot of clubs would settle for that. You know, like, there's some clubs would say, well, that wasn't a bad old season, but know, the players seem raring to go. It was mentioned there about their first preseason friendly against Wexford as well, and just kind of getting the ideas out there. It'd be interesting to see on Wearing's style of play this year, how much it differs to what Noel King offered last year. Players could settle into different positions. It's, you know, anything could really happen there with a new manager. So, as I mentioned, there will be more Women's Premier Division side talk as the pre-season moves along. Obviously, we'll have more friendlies to talk about, and there will be a little bit more spotlight thrown on the Women's Premier Division as we move on. Mark Coyle opened the proceedings there. Adam, could you have picked a better captain for the club for this year?
I was just about to say, Steve, like, you actually took the words out of my mouth. I don't think you could pick a better leader, given the circumstances with Luke Bourne. I think Marks is a player who's come on leaps and bounds, isn't he, since he comes to Shells. And I know he's had his injury problems at times, but when he's on form and when he's fully fit, I don't think there's a much better centre midfielder in the league at what he does. And by all accounts, like, the leadership on and off the pitch is there to be seen by all. And look, he has a few experienced heads around him there now as well, with the likes of Gannon and obviously, like, John O'Sullivan coming from Bowles, having played abroad and stuff. So, like, he has good heads around him too. But yeah, no, as far as leader goes, I don't think he could have picked a better one.
Here, I totally agree with that. We also got a voice note in to the group chat, into the 1895 group chat, from Aaron Rowe. His under-13 Shell side made the trip to the Carnival Cup in Spain. It's a hugely prestigious tournament. It's obviously an underage tournament based in Spain. It's probably the biggest tournament of that age group in Europe. It's a massive honour to be able to play in it. And Aaron gave us a little rundown of how things went over there.
How's things, lads? Aaron here from the Academy, just giving you a quick update on how our under-13s team done in the International Carnival Cup in Barcelona on the weekend. Unbelievable tournament, unbelievable experience for everybody involved, really, players and coaches. The level of tournament, the venue, the opposition, the organisation, just top class. You've teams from all the Liga teams are in it, teams from Japan, the States, all over Europe, Finland, Sweden. So just a great experience for the players and coaches to experience different types of football, different cultures around the place, off the pitch as well, and mixing with that is brilliant. It's our third year in the competition now as a club, and in fairness to Collie, he's the one who has us in that and competing, which just shows the direction he wants us to go in, that we're competing against the best and testing ourselves against the best players and coaches and academies in the world and seeing where we're at. In terms of our preparation for the tournament, it started probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. We upped the ante with 4 nights a week training. The lads were training every Friday with the National League teams. Collie was coaching them on the Fridays. Lukey Byrne done a session with them on back four and defending in the lead up to it, which we definitely needed going over there, because we knew it was going to be so tough, and it paid off, because we only conceded one goal bar the Barcelona game. So really, really good. Myself, Johnny the coach, and Yus were putting through their paces, and the lads were working really hard in the build up to it, and it paid off, because they should be and they are really proud of how they performed. And we flew in on the Thursday. We played Premier de Alt, the tournament hosts, in a friendly. We won 4-1. It was a good exercise for them, because we were able to get out, experience the setting and the venue not in a competitive game, and get a good 4-1 win, which was really, really good. And then on Friday we played Genk. We lost 1-0 in the game, which was a bit of a sucker punch, because we felt we definitely could have got something out of the game, and it was a bit of bit deflating coming away from that, and after playing such a big academy and knowing that we could have and should have taken more from the game. And they were given a dubious penalty about 5 minutes before the end of the game, which was just a killer really for us. But the lads kept pushing the game for an equaliser, just didn't happen, and then we had to get straight across the city to play Virginia from the States, and we played them. We drew 0-0. It was a really good performance, really good football play. We just couldn't finish. It was one of those where we couldn't put it away. And at the end of Friday, I think everybody was a little bit downbeat, because we're going away going, how have we only 1 point on the board after two really, really positive performances against top teams? And tournament football is you need to make the most of the group games, because it determines where you finish to go on and what phase and what side of the tournament you'd be on. And we'd always eyes on qualifying for the elite phase and hopefully testing ourselves against a big Spanish team. So that Friday we did a lot of preparation. The lads all watched their games back on from the Friday, which they enjoyed, and we done a couple of individual meetings with them on little things they could all do to improve, and they picked out themselves on what they could improve and what they done well. And then Saturday we met, and as a team they picked key areas we needed to add to our game to hopefully get a positive result against Girona. And they did that. They got after Girona. They really went for it. They defended really well. They worked hard. We played football against them. It wasn't a smash and grab because we were actually all over them, really. We were pushing and pushing. We were actually down to 10 men, and we won the game 1-0 and surprised everyone by qualifying for the Elite Phase, because I don't think anyone expected us to be in the Elite Phase. We had to shoot back across the city. We played that Girona game at 3 o'clock, and we had to be back across the city for 4:30 to play FC Lahti from Finland. So it was real quick turnaround, and we had to shoot straight across. And in fairness, the lads, we went out to that game and they done well. It was a tough game, but they kept in it. Again, it was probably a little bit more even than the other games, and drew nil all. And we end up winning the game then on penalties 5-4 with two really good saves from our keeper, Leighton Cullen. Great celebrations then after that game, as you can imagine, to know that we've done what we set out, which was to hopefully achieve to get the last 16 and then push on from there. And as we're still 5 minutes after that game celebrating and enjoying the moment, you're told, right lads, you're playing FC Barcelona in half an hour. So that was a bit of a... That was one where you had to try and shift the attention from the joy of winning that last 32 shootout to, right, you're now playing the best academy on the planet. So fairness to the lads, they done it. They were all switched on. They went out and they gave it their best go. And just Barcelona were a top, top class team. They went on and won the overall competition. They beat Real 3-0 in the final. So look, we're really proud of the lads. The lads were as well. And great thing as well to get three player of the match awards from the tournament, for Killian Phillips against Girona in the group stage, Ado Rascu against Virginia in the group stage, and then our keeper Leighton got one in the last 32 game against Lahti. So really, really good trip and experience for them, and hopefully we can get back over there next year and break that last 16 duct and hopefully be the first Irish team to get to a quarters in that competition. So yeah, all good. Thanks for asking me on, and cheers lads.
The Young Reds facing off against Barcelona. Ben, sounds good, doesn't it?
Storybook stuff, isn't it? The Reds and Barca, obviously a bit of a history there. So, look, if anything, it's an unbelievable experience for those young lads to go over and get. Like, imagine you come into school and you say, yeah, just playing Barcelona there during the week and to do my maths homework now. It's unbelievable, and it's a great shout. And it's great to see the work that people like Aaron are putting into the academy and the coaches and the staff. Like, look, if you can't build your club on the academy, what can you build on? And all this stuff is extremely positive going forward, and you partner that with the community initiative and the affiliated clubs. We're doing great work, and it's positive work as a club, and it's only going to bring us forward into the future, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think I don't want to brush over the fact that the club were even invited to that tournament, because like those tournaments don't just, you know, they don't dish out invites for the crack. Like, you have to be at a certain level and be thought of in a certain esteem to even get an opportunity to travel to those kind of tournaments. So, I mean, for the lads to do what they did, getting to the last 16 against Barcelona, who ended up playing in a Clásico in the final against Real Madrid, like, they were playing two games in a day. It was just incredible. And experience-wise, like, even if none of those lads ever go on to kick a ball in the League of Ireland or abroad, they'll always have that to lean back on, that, yeah, I went out and got to play against Barcelona. And you can be sure a couple of those Barcelona lads will pop up on a La Liga fixture at some stage over the next probably 10 or so years. So, incredible experience. Adam, how hopeful or how realistic do you think it would be with the way the club is going for one of those under-13 Shells lads to, you know, maybe in a short few years be donning a senior team jersey?
Oh yeah, it's definitely capable of happening, isn't it? Like, you look at, I think especially since Duffer's come to the club, he's not shy about bringing young players into the fold. I think he obviously had Jada Kiki now involved in the squad quite regularly. Caffrey, obviously, he came from UCD, but looking beyond that, the likes of Stefan Agri, and then was it Luke Brown who's gone to Palace as well? These young players are coming through, and definitely, how would you put it? There's like a clear path, I suppose, into getting into this side. And I think under the guidance of Duffer, and then even on the women's side things, under the likes of Alan Wern, There's definitely scope to get involved, yeah, 100%.
And if you ask anyone involved in kind of academy football in this country, the importance, and look, whatever about the monetary gain or stuff like that from the likes of Luke Brown going abroad, obviously Stefan Edgerud went before him. Like, to be able to go to clubs and say to them, well, look, here you go, here's Luke Brown, here's Stefan Edgerud, you know, they came up through the academy. Obviously, with the work of their own schoolboy clubs before that, I'm not one for brushing the work of that kind of foundation level aside, but it's a carrot that you can then use in the academy to get those, you know, top end kind of players to come into the club. And that just breeds more kind of positivity around the academy and with, like, the experience. I know Aaron mentioned there about Luke Byrne putting on a session for them before they went. I mean, that's an experienced, top level player there that those lads are being able to learn from. So I just think it's going a great direction. It's important to hear from all different parts of the club as well. You know, we're not just a men's team or a women's team. It's a collective now, which it never used to be, but it definitely seems to be at this moment in time. We put out a call for voice notes for people for the 1895 group chat. It's your group chat. We want you to talk about what you want to talk about, bring up what you want to bring up. If you have anything in particular for us to talk about, by all means, get in touch. 085-166-6784 is the WhatsApp group. It's the same phone number that Talka Talks will drop their update at on a Tuesday morning. So just drop a voice note. Some people seem to be a little bit more comfortable with a text, which is perfectly fine as well. We're quite happy to take those on. So we have three voice notes to play. Unfortunately, nobody gave us their names again. And the mystery man that me and Ben were joking about last week, he's come back again and introduced himself in the text as the mystery man. So I don't really know what's going on there. But here's three voice notes from various different members of the fan base.
I think the most recent signings just show where the club's ambitions are at. Getting Jarvis in for the men's, of course, massive signing, like Stuff said, that X factor, exactly what we need, can hopefully get us to challenge for Europe, maybe title if we're lucky. It's the hope, isn't it? And also on the women's side, bring in Ava and also Roma, ex-Ireland internationals. There's loads to look forward to on the women's side too. We can actually go for it, the title again, hopefully win it this year, same with the cup. And yeah, it's just really excited us, I think, for the season, just getting these big signings in, especially at this point before the season starts, just so we can really get fired up for it. Can't wait.
How are you, lads? Really excited for the new season. I think we can push for that European spot again. You know, really look forward to seeing Sean Gannon in centre back. I reckon Duffer could go to a back five this year with Barrett, Gannon and Griffin. You know, Gannon coming in with the experience of playing with Rovers really helped Griffin and Barrett. Good experience as well, Wardy coming in, experienced winger. Good to bring on towards the end of the games. We need to keep the ball on the corner flag.
My prediction for the new season is Shells to go on and win the cup, qualify for Europe, and to push Rovers all the way, narrowly missing out by 3 points. Up the Shells.
There we have it. Different opinions on different parts of the football club. First up, Adam, I'll ask you this one. For the women's team this season, the signings of Ava O'Mahony and Ronald McLaughlin, how important are signings like that?
I think it puts a marker down, doesn't it? I think we can't undervalue as well the signing of Jess Gargan. I think Jess Gargan was the best right back, the best fullback in the league the season before last, and she had a cracking season for Rovers as well last season. So I think bringing her back to the club is massive. The two internationals, as you said, Ava O'Mahony, Ronald McLaughlin, like, they're coming in with vast experience, and like, you don't get moves abroad and stuff like that, and you don't become a full international if you haven't got quality. And I'd say it's put the fear into a lot of clubs in the league, and as far as the fan goes, as far as we go, like, it's great for us. It's the same with the men's team, with the recruits they brought in. It makes you look forward to looking at it. It's a new team under Alan Murray, so you're looking forward to seeing how he lays his, I suppose, foundation down. And yeah, the new signings are crucial, and I'd say a lot of clubs around the league are looking at that, you know, worried.
Ben, the second voice note there alludes to Sean Gannon offering a lot of experience and playing in kind of a more central role in a back five. Can you see it panning out that way?
Look, I think the option is definitely there. He's well capable of it, but when we saw the game against Longford, he did play in that kind of right wing back role, and look, you see the experience he has. It just comes out in spades. Like, it's amazing. Just even being on the touchline watching him play, I was in awe of the amount of information he gives his teammates. Like, he makes the game easier for other people. He has a great awareness of the game. And look, obviously, you can tell what he's won, what he's done in the league. It's incredible. But yeah, look, if need be, I'd say he had no problem slotting in there. And again, he'll bring those qualities to that position.
And a specific mention there for Keith Ward. I'm struggling to call him Wardy because I haven't actually met the man yet. So I struggle with that. I think makes me try and sound like I know the fella personally. So I'm going to go with Keith for now. but the likes of a Keith Ward, like, for everyone's talking about, you know, impact sub or like a classic thing. And I'm dying to sit down with him and ask him, is he starting to get annoyed by that kind of thing of, he's a good lad in the dressing room? Like, Adam, do you think a player of that level, of that ability, is sitting back going, hang on a minute, like, it's more to me than having a bit of crack in the dressing room and lifting lads' spirits?
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's been around for so long and played at a high level, you know, alludes to the fact that he's not coming here to sit on the bench. He's not coming here to be a cheerleader. Like, I think he definitely has those qualities of bringing, you know, a team together. And, you know, he seems like a great personality. He seems like a lovely fellow from all I've heard about him. But he has got quality. I think he hoarded us, didn't he, last season when he was with Dundalk as well. So, like, he's going to come in. He's going to look to be playing. And he's probably not one of the signings that, again, a bit like what we were saying about John O'Sullivan earlier, we were probably a bit, not apprehensive, but maybe not as excited as others, but still, it's still a crucial sign. It's vast experience, and look, he's going to be coming in to play for Shelburne and in Europe and the FAI Cup and the league, everything. He's kind of want to be involved.
Yeah, he actually got an assist in one of those games in Dundalk. He picked a cross out and stuck it on, I think it was Pat Hoban or Hooban, stuck it on Pat Hooban's head. So, like, that's what he could give you. Like, it may only be 5 minutes at the end, but he's going to pop up with an assist or a big moment, and you're going to need stuff like that, especially if, you know, we want to be kind of pushing on to the top end of the pitch. And it was funny, Ben, you mentioned there about Sean Gannon and the information he was given on Friday and, you know, how vocal he was. I was surprised by Keith Ward. He did not stop barking at people from the minute he came onto the pitch. He was telling people where to be. He was at people over their quality. He was wanting people to up their levels, even though we were, 6-0 up at the time. He was still at people and at people and at people. That's probably a side to Keith Ward that I didn't know existed.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's one of those things, if you're not seeing it week in, week out, you wouldn't really know it's there, because you might see it the odd time and you say, just overlook it. But like you said, 6-0 up, like, pushing on, the game was done, and he was still demanding standards and things to be met. And, you know, that's great to have when you're so comfortable in the game, but yet you're still out looking for more. And I think it just shows the mentality that he brings to the side. And that's going to be great for the young players, but that's going to be great for the squad as a whole. And I suppose when you bring in a player with that kind of experience, that is what you get. You get a winner, you get that winning mentality. And look, if that can spread to the rest of the squad, I think there's nothing really out of our reach. I think we can push for a lot of things. And I think it's just a very exciting season to be a Red.
Ads from the last voice note there. Can Shells push Rovers all the way?
Absolutely. I texted you the other day, Steve, about a podcast we did around this time last year. I think it was about predictions for the league.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And me and you, I don't think we fully predicted now, but we definitely hinted at Shells making Europe. And I think we probably would have been laughed at, and rightfully so. But I think we can, 100%. I don't see why we can't. I said it umpteen times so far in the podcast, this is a very strong squad. And look, I think this Rovers side is unbelievable. So it's going to be difficult, naturally enough. But I don't see why we can't, given the management, given kind of the quality of player that he's improved in recent times, and then the fact that some of the players that are in the side are of high quality who have been brought in. The experience, you know, I suppose, almost the confidence of the side as well. I don't see why we can't. I'm probably going to be laughed at. I'll accept it. But if we come out of the season winning something, I wouldn't be that surprised.
I'd probably tend to agree. To be fair, it will be very, very difficult. But Darren will love this, but I think our name's on the cup. I think there's bodies in there that are just built for cup football. The likes of a Sean Boyd, a Liam Bird, a Will Jarvis, a Keith Ward that can just come up with a bit of magic when you need it. I think we have it in spades there. So, yeah, that's my one of my predictions, that the Reds win the cup. We got a few texts in. I got them through Twitter or X, if we want to go by the proper title. And a few were sent in to the 1895 group chat number, which again is 0851666784. All I would say, sign off your name so we know who you are. That's the one thing I would say. There's a lot of anonymous stuff, and the old anonymous stuff can end up being dodgy enough. So get your names in, we can give you a little mention. But the first one, and I do want to kind of hone in on this one because I think it's important to mention. Hi lads, love the podcast and can't wait for Friday night. Just on the away tickets, was a bit messy last week getting one for Waterford, especially when it's for more than one season ticket holder using a single email address. Maybe someone from the club can explain or give advice, as we have a lot of new season ticket holders looking to purchase away tickets. From what I've seen, a good few people had problems logging on and creating accounts, etc. One question, at the link to get tickets in the email, it's saying anyone could purchase an email, not just season ticket holders. I'd love somebody from the club to be able to clarify. It would be great to hear. Many thanks. Up the Reds, John Walsh. So I'll go on a bit of a, not a rant here, but just from my understanding of it is, we have no, I say we, Shells have no control over the way the away tickets are given out, allocated. Like, we literally have zero say in that. The club weren't told in advance that, you know, you have to create a profile, you have to do this, that, and the other. Like, that's not how it works. So if you're on a different ticketing platform to a different club, there's no, like, you have no follow-up. You have to do it their way. And that's basically what happened in this instance with Waterford. Seemed a really overly complicated kind of way of doing it. I know my brother had a lot of trouble because same thing, him and his son's email addresses are the same. Because obviously the young lad's buying a kid's season ticket, so he couldn't register again because the email was already in use. And it just seemed very kind of convoluted and just messy. But like, we, the club, as far as I'm aware, have no say in it. It probably highlights the need for like a central ticket system through the league where everyone is on the same platform. So stuff like this doesn't happen. And the other issue with it is, like, the other clubs don't really care who buys them. Like, they don't care if season ticket holders get them or if just normal punters get them. They're still getting their money. And like, unfortunately, Waterford won't sell out in the way and then talk anyway. So they have no reason to kind of care, if that makes sense. So now, that's not the club speaking, that's me speaking. I think that's my take on the whole thing. As far as I'm aware, the club have no kind of say on how those away tickets are dished out. It was a shit show, to be totally honest. It was an absolute calamity. Now, as it happens, there are still, we're recording on Tuesday evening, there are still funny terrorist tickets, they're running track tickets, are still available. So, I mean, nobody should miss out, but completely agree with people's frustrations, but your frustration is probably towards Waterford rather than Shells. There's me, look, shilling. I'm a shill for Shelbourne Football Club, but
club man duty.
I do think it's important, though, you know, that people know that it's not a Shells issue, it's a Waterford issue.
It's not on us.
Next up, mystery man here again, lads. Who in the league will be the overachievers this season and who will be the underachievers? Also, your predictions for Shell's top scorer this season now that Super Jack Moylan is gone. Ben Cleary, who's going to overachieve in the League of Ireland this year? I'll take player, I'll take club, I'll take anything.
If we're looking at a club that's going to overachieve, I think, is it fair to say us? Like, I know people expect, you know, the maybe a European finish, fourth is kind of where most people have us in predictions. But look, if I'm looking in from what I've seen this season, the squad they put, the manager has put together, I'd be happy with a third or a second. I think that's maybe overachieving and a title push, if you will, as Ad's alluded to. But yeah, I think we could be overachievers in the grand scheme of things.
Adam, you're overachievers.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't think that's a bad show from Ben either. Like, it would be an overachievement if we were to finish that high up the league, given the circumstances of club and years gone by. But looking outside of Shells, I actually think Waterford are going to do all right. I don't want to be contrary to what Ben was saying earlier. I do agree with what you said about, you know, Galway and going away there. It's going to be tough.
Oh, tell him he's wrong. Tell him he's a dick. That's good podcasting.
Come here, look at he's definitely not wrong. No, he is. No, I'm not listening. Look at
I'll see you Friday, Pat.
Outside the ground, Ben. Now, look, I think Waterford will actually overachieve. And I have three teams written here. I have Waterford, Galway, and Drogheda.
Jeez, Thomas sitting on the fence.
I know. But I'm just looking at some of the attacking options. I think Perro for Drogs is going to be very good, I'd imagine. And then looking at, as we said earlier, Waterford, Podge Gammond, you'd imagine he'd be good. And then for Galway, Wasim, Outre. So, to be very diplomatic, I'm going to say one of those three teams are going to be the overachievers.
I actually think it'd be Galway. Darren, I think, scoffed at me on here giving predictions the other week. John Caulfield, just that type of football he plays. Then backed up by Ollie Horgan, which probably doesn't help in trying to bring out any kind of exuberance in a footballer. Mm. But they'll be effective. They will be a nightmare to play against. There's experience in there. Look, obviously, we know Clarkey very well. Such an experienced goalkeeper. He could still don the gloves for any team in the league. In my opinion, I think Galway could definitely overachieve. Overachieve being staying out of those bottom two spots, I think, would be an overachievement for most Galway people. I think most Galway fans would be happy enough with that. Adam, you're underachievers. Who do you think is going to underachieve?
The second best team on the north side of Dublin. I think they're going to struggle this season big time. I don't think they've recruited very well. I don't think the management is great. I don't want to dig a grave for myself here, but I just think, given how they've been the past couple of seasons, I think a bottom half of the table finishes on the way for them. So I'd say Bowes would be the underachievers this season.
Ben?
I think it's hard not to agree with Ads there when the most exciting thing you do in an off season is launch a new away jersey. It is a bit difficult to see. look, shoot from the hip. But I think Dundalk as well will be one of those sides that'll underachieve. I think they're an ambitious project, but they've lost a lot of talent. I think it's going to be very hard for them to stay above seventh. I think I had them down at an eighth for a prediction, so I think they're going to underachieve this season.
They're funny. Like, Bowes are a funny one because it's been very toxic. Well, a lot of the social media, like, you're based on this off kind of social media stuff that you see. But I just think they're going into a season with that toxic kind of negativity. All it takes is a couple of bogey results. Like, they're playing Sligo in the first game, I think it is. Bad result there, and things can very, very quickly take a turn. I'm just going to stay away from predicting anything for them altogether because I just can't bring myself to do it. This might be unfair to say it'll be an underachievement, but I think Drogheda will probably slump this year. I think they could be destined for the drop. They're the only part-time team left in the league. Part-time is probably not totally accurate with the amount they train, but just for little things, looking after players' recoveries and video work, all that type of stuff, it's a lot more difficult to do when you're part-time. I love Kev Doherty. For his sake, I hope they don't, but I just, you look through their squad, it's just a bit average. And like, they lost obviously Conor Keighley last year, who was a mountain at the back for them. I'll actually get on to Conor Keighley in a second, but yeah, I think Drogheda for me, I think they could go down this year. And it's probably unfair to say they'd underachieve if they go down, because realistically, they probably should be down there being a part-time side. But or another one, again, you're risking egg on the face. Pats is my other one.
That's a bold shout.
I don't know what it is. I just don't see it. I think a lot of uncertainty, like a lot of people will jump on the keeper for obviously the performance in the President's Cup final. That can happen. I mean, you can have stinkers. You know, that's you can't base it all off that. But just people not really familiar to the league. And then even Conor Keighley, that for me, if you're looking to push on and win a league, no disrespect to Conor, he was a decent servant when he was with Shells, and I appreciate that was when he was a lot younger. But is that really a centre back that's going to win you a league title? Oh, I don't know. I'm not sold on that one. Joe Redmond, probably one of the best centre half, definitely one of the best centre backs in the country. Just think you'd want a little bit more beside him than Conor Keighley for me. And the other one is Rory Keane. He's had like one really good season last year, and he's kind of been underwhelming everywhere else he's been. Again, I just don't know whether he is that kind of talisman that'll. I know he scored a lot of goals for Cork last year, but I know a lot of Reds people wanted to sign him, but like, give me Matty Smith over Rory Keane any day of the week. I don't know whether you agree or disagree with that, but yeah, Pats, I'm not totally sold. I think a title charge is totally out of question for them.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Pats at all. I'd fancy Galway and Friday to turn them over, to be honest. Like you said about Caulfield and Ollie Horgan, it's absolute anti-football, but they will be effective. And I think with outro up front, they are going to cause a lot of teams problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if Pats drop points on Friday. You know, Steve, I would agree with you.
Yeah, we're going to have to speed this show up. Jeez, we're covered a lot of stuff here. It's nice to have people getting in touch so that we don't have to sit here and make up things to talk about. So I suppose there's always a positive in that one. Alan got in touch and he asked, based on the size of the squad, do you think we'll see much squad rotation early in the season this year? Adam, I'll throw it to you for that one.
I don't know, Steve. I think that's a difficult one. I think like the problem is probably keeping players happy and keeping players motivated, but with it being such early on, you would imagine that Duffer will have a side that he's confident in and he'll want to be playing regularly. So I would imagine yes, but maybe more off the bench rather than actual kind of chopping and changing certain 11s. I can see Duffer, you know, exploiting 5 substitutions every game. I'll put it that way. But look, it is an embarrassment of riches. But yeah, I can see maybe when we get towards Europe, that end of the season and the cup and stuff, that's probably when the squad will be rotated more. But same time, the games are ticking fast early on, aren't they? There's a few Friday, Monday, so yeah, you'd imagine there'd be a bit of squad rotation.
I think like Duffer rotated a little bit last year, but it was always forced. It was always through an injury or something like that, that we kind of had to change a few bodies. Like the manager always talks about Mero Martins and how good he is as a strength conditioning and the kind of condition he has the players in. Ben, rotation kind of as a whole, are you for or against?
I think, look, as you said, the manager was forced into a lot of rotation, but if you want to build up that consistency, I think that's what the top teams do. Like when they have that same kind of starting 11, you know, one or two odd changes here and there, but you need to kind of build up that this is your starting 11, this is what you're working towards, force your way in, and then you have that carrot to dangle then for players. But I think, as Ad said, we do have an embarrassment of riches. We have that depth this season. So I think that is more aimed towards maybe later in the season, in the summer maybe, where you can see rotations with European games. But I think early on in the season, you have to kind of establish that starting 11, and they need to build up that consistency. You're just lucky you have a similar spine, I suppose, the last few years. So there isn't too much to build on. But I think especially key for a consistent front three if we are to kind of push on and do well.
I actually missed one of the parts of the mystery man's question. He also asked us for top goal scorers, the top Shells goal scorer. Adam?
Mike Smith.
Ben?
All right, yeah, take my one, no problem. yeah, I think it's hard to argue with Matty Smith if he stays injury-free this season. He's an absolute game-changer. He just has that ability to put the team on his back and just create something and do something. So if he continues on the finishing from the Longford game, he's an easy top scorer for me this season.
It's a trifecta. I'm all in on Mike Smith this year. He just looked, again, I know it was Longford, but he just looked gears above. Even when he was fit the first time around, he just looked so sharp. And I really fancy him. Go on, Ben, sorry.
Yeah, no, he just looked like he hit different levels. Like, I was just trying to add to that like, he looked a complete different animal, I think is the best way to put it. He just looked so motivated out there. And if you have that kind of motivation to play Longford in friendly in Abbottstown, you know, what are you going to do against Waterford the first game of the season?
Yeah, next club of his, of course. And for those of you that enjoy a flutter here and there, Matty Smith is somehow 40-1 to be the league's top goal scorer, which I think is absolutely crazy, considering the low tally that's been for the last couple of years. And the two top goal scorers from last year in Afolabi and Moylan are both gone. So, yeah, if you're that way inclined, you definitely want to take a look at. We're almost there. We are almost there. Ben, give me a hot take for the season. Can be Shells or league related?
Oh, hot take. Oh, that's a good one, Duty. You've kind of stumped me there. I'd say I'd go with something similar, something we've had already. I can't see Derry doing well this season. It's similar to Pat's. I don't see it with Derry. I really don't.
I tend to agree. Ads, hit me with your hot take.
It's like an echo chamber because I had that written down about Derry, but like I genuinely think Bowes are in for a very tough season. So I'd say Bowes bottom three maybe. That'd be my hot take, but I don't know if that's a scalding hot take, to be honest, because I think they're in tatters at the minute. So I don't know, but yeah, I think Derry is a good show. I don't think they've really invested. I know they've gotten Huben and Dan O'Kelly in the off-season, but other than that, I don't think they've done a whole lot.
My hot take is Tyreek Wilson to be in the team of the year.
Oh, well.
I can't put my finger on it, but the three friendlies I've seen, he looked like a lad who came through the Man City Academy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
He was just doing things and seeing things that other people just weren't. And I mentioned earlier on that the manager has alluded to before about his intelligence, and he takes information on well and he can play in different positions. He's just a totally different player to the lad that finished the season with Bowes 2 years ago. And I see him in the team of the year. That's my hot take. Last up, the most important part of this podcast, especially this week, Adam Leonard. We, as you well know, like to cover the Richie Rankins. There's two types of people in the world. As I mentioned in the intro, there's a Richie Baker, an all-round good fella, good bloke, happy, smiley, enthusiastic, scores league-winning goals for the Reds. Or there's a Richie Winter who steals sweets from children, laughs at elderly people falling over, and costs people cup finals. So give me your Richie Baker for this week.
This is a bit of a Matty Smith loving, because I have Matty Smith as my Richie Baker. And you said to me earlier, and I was laughing, you said, I fancy Matty Smith, and then you just stopped talking. So with the week that it is, maybe it is a Matty Smith loving. Now look at, I think after his hat-trick against Longford, I just think a fully fit Matty Smith is what we want to see, isn't it? And I do, like yourself, I do fancy him to have a good season. So he is my Richie Baker for the season, or for this week, excuse me.
Ben, you're Richie Baker?
Richie Baker. Oh, well, mine was Matty Smith. That's what I did have written down. But I'll go with Sean Gannon. Looked levels above what he was at Rovers in against Longford. He just looked really sharp. I think he's going to be a big, big signing for us this season.
We're going to have to start touching base before this podcast because I have Rich Baker down as mine for banging in that hat-trick. But I'll change. I'll go Keith Ward for turning to Owen Smith and a couple of his mates for advice on whether there was an offside or not during the friendly on Friday. And the two lads, or whoever he asked, said back, no, he was onside. He was onside, Wardy. And then Wardy started roaring at the linesman, just going off the opinion of a couple of Shells fans that had wandered up to Abbottstown. So I had a lot of time for that from Keith Ward. I'll give you, I have a feeling we could be all in the same ballpark on the Richie Winter for this week. But it's Galway United as a whole. The carry-on during the week was amateur hour. Really was amateur hour. If you didn't see what went on there, you've been living under a rock all week. But distasteful, disrespectful, and heads should roll for a mistake like that. So, Galway United, you are my Richie Winter for the week. Lads, get your opinions in.
Ben, do you want to go ahead for us in case I have yours again?
Well, that was mine. I think, look, we're all in agreement. It was just, look, mistakes can happen, but some of them shouldn't happen. And that was one that shouldn't have happened. It's not a good look for the club, not a good look for the league. It's just, it's not good overall. So I think I'm just going to have to agree with you there, Doody.
Adam?
Look, it's terrible. And coming into the first week of the season, it doesn't bode well. And it's just wrong. Yeah, it wasn't good.
So there we have a resounding 3 votes for Galway United. As the
feels like the X factor here, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, actually, yeah. But I'm enjoying this. I have to talk less in a 3-man booth, so I'm more than happy with this arrangement.
I was going to give my Richie Winter to Valentine's Day as a concept. because I thought you were going to ask me what I was going to pick, but very resounding, I suppose.
There you have it, Valentine's Day, worse than Galway United. No, Adam, I would tend to agree with you on Valentine's Day. Absolute lot of show you.
Really gone off the rails here.
This is what Darren always says, this is when you get your best podcasting done, when you just go off on a tangent and start to do and say mad stuff.
And now on to the Lions.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Right, men, I appreciate you giving up your evening a little bit later than was originally scheduled, but we got there in the end. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a million, gents. Looking forward to seeing you on Friday.
Thanks for having me, as always, Doody.
There are still tickets available as of Tuesday evening at 8:25. There are still tickets available for the away end on Friday in the RSC. It's the first game of the season. Opportunity to start on a high. Let's hope for 3 points and down the road. Thanks again, lads, and up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.